see the compelling reason, there's no force to do it all.
And Revenue Committee is open. Good morning, everyone. Welcome back from our spring break. We're in the Revenue Committee. We're going to go through these three public hearings today with Military Dispatch, Senator Boquist.
Got it.
Starting off with House Bill 2489. I will open up a public hearing and work session on House Bill 2489. Kyle.
Clock's ticking here, Kyle. I can make the motion without you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2489, it is a Department of Revenue bill, and it relates to cigarette taxation. What it will do is it removes the expiration of cigarette tax stamps following tax increases in January 1, 2016 and 2018. It places limits on distributor purchases of cigarette tax stamps in the 2 months prior to each scheduled tax increase to no more than 150% of the six-month average. That begins May 1st, 2015 through October 31st, 2015 for the tax increase scheduled in 2016, and then does the same thing prior to the tax increase scheduled in 2018. Directs the Department of Revenue to determine the six-month average purchase of tax stamps for each distributor. So just to give a little bit of background, passed in House Bill 3601 in the 2013 special session were three tax increases on cigarette tax stamps. The first was 13 cents in 2014 on January 1. That one included a tax floor. So a floor is essentially you're taxing the amount of inventory that's in stock, the stamps in inventory, on January 1 for that increment. So you'd levy a tax of 13 cents to kind of capture that difference. And it also discourages distributors and retailers of stocking up prior to a tax increase on the stamps that are levied at the lesser rate prior to it. And then in the 2016 and 2018, the increase of a penny each did not include a floor tax. Rather, what was set up was that there would be an expiration of the stamps 30 days following. Now, the issue here is that's a pretty quick turnaround time for distributors and retailers to work through their existing inventory. So after January 31st, the existing stamps, January 31st, 2016, any packs of cigarettes that are stamped with the older stamps or any stamps that are in the hands of the distributors would no longer be valid. So they could essentially be contraband, seized, and subject to fines and everything, so that they could no longer be sold. so the issue is really, would retailers and distributors have enough time to work through their inventory of the older stamps in that 31-day window? So what this bill does is it removes that expiration of the cigarette tax stamps and then limits the purchases of inventory prior to the lead-up of the new stamps coming in, the one-cent increase, in an effort to limit distributors being able to really purchase a number of stamps ahead of the 1 cent tax increase. And there is, we do have the paperwork on this. Excuse me, the fiscal, I believe, is a minimal, and the revenue impact is also a minimal impact. There could be, because of the removal of the expiration and the limiting of the increase or the sales of stamps leading up to it, we expect that would probably stop or limit any distributors taking advantage of the 1 cent increase. And then there's also a slight decrease or loss of revenue, as under current law we would expect distributors and retailers to really limit their existing inventory, so that then on January 1, when the tax increase comes into law, they would purchase a number of stamps at that point, so that way they could try to limit the amount of contraband they essentially have at the end of the month under existing law.
Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So Kyle, in short, we're fixing technical errors in 3601 so we can actually implement this.
Senator Boquist, yes, I think that's the general idea.
Got it. Thanks.
I think the more polite wording is in this briefing that says, perhaps, in recognition that the legislature did not include the floor tax language. So let's call up Deanna Mack and maybe get a refresher on tax stamps and how that works and why we need to do this.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Deanna Mack, Department of Revenue. And I really don't have a whole lot of extra to say after what Kyle did. He did a really good job of explaining what it is that we are trying to do here. The legislature, when they passed 3601, didn't think that they should put a floor tax on the 1 cent increases because of the administrative costs, both for our agency as well as for taxpayers, because they literally have to go out and take an inventory of what they have on stock for the difference, and it's just a one penny increase. So they instead put the expiration on the books so that to handle the front loading issue that Kyle explained. We've gotten feedback from industry that that's just not enough time to go through their inventory. So it would be considered contraband after the 31st, which means that they would lose not only the one penny, you know, the Oregon tax on it, the $1.31, they'd also lose the federal tax and the cost of the product over a one penny increase. And so it seemed like a terribly fair way to handle it. So instead, to manage the front loading, the perceived front loading issue, we suggested managing their sales rather than expiring the stamp. So one roll of stamps is $36,000. The 1 cent increase is a $300 risk of front loading. So we don't think that a lot of people will do that, but that is kind of the intent here, is to just manage their sales and manage that front loading concern in a different way than the stamp expiry. If you have any questions, I'm available.
Senator Boquist?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2489 to the floor with the two passes.
I just thought you had a question.
You asked me.
Do you have any other questions here? You were one of the grand bargainers who perhaps left this out for good reason.
And Mr. Chair, and I'll speak to my motion.
All right. We have no amendments. Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2489. Thank you, Deanna. Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2489 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Yeah.
Senator Boquist first.
Well, I'll be go happy. Ahead. I'll be happy to carry this since Senator, we screwed it up on the floor. So.
Senator Edwards.
Well, there are five members of this committee, and I do have some questions. I thought we might actually have some testimony. So I guess one of my questions for either somebody out there or Senator Boquist or the chair is, are we talking about the department mentioned managing the sales? Are you talking about the sales of the stamps? Is that what we're talking about?
And you know
how many, what 150% of a 6 month average would be?
Mr. Chair,
that's readily available.
Senator Edwards, yes. I think there's only a few dozen distributors, and so we can actually look to see what their actual sales were over that prior 6 month period. It's not a difficult task at all.
Okay. I think that's my only question right now.
Senator Boquist.
And just for clarity, I think from the other tobacco products, and this was obviously technical language area from the grand bargain, but I think the real issue is certain stores just don't sell that much, you know.
Right.
Contrary to what we hear this stuff where Portland, you know, sells, you know, gazillions of these across the borders, there are some places that just don't sell them. And so the tax stamp sitting on there is now a lot more automated than it used to be, which is why the huge rolls versus the old days where we put one stamp on it. And so what they're trying to do is just get the inventory so that the small retailers, so on and so forth, through the distributors have this inventory, and if the way it is right now, it becomes illegal and contraband. Not that we have anybody to go out and find it, but the stamp would in fact technically be illegal. So
I guess my follow-up question, Mr. Chair, would be, I'm sorry, I don't remember your name.
Deanna Mack.
What's that?
Deanna Mack.
Deanna. So you said in your testimony, you mentioned the perceived the perception that distributors might front load their purchasing, and so you use that word for a reason, and I'm wondering, is that real or is it not real? And then my follow-up question to that is, I don't know that much about cigarette retailing. I don't know if there is a freshness issue. I mean, can distributors buy 2 years worth and still sell it? Or at some point, do consumers say, these are, you know, they take them back and they sell them on a, you know, the discount or something like that? And does that address the issue anyway?
Okay, Mr. Chair and Senator Edwards, let me see if I can remember all the questions in there. The perception of front loading is real. People do it. Okay. It's just that in this particular case, it's a 1 cent increase, and so the cost of the roll is they would have to expend $36,000 in order to save $300. So we think the risk in this case is very low, although it is there, because they may choose to do that if that's the case. And it leads into your freshness question, that there are some stores that do have product that just fill the shelves that they'll never sell because it's just there to look like make their shelves look full. And it is a freshness issue. But they do have, people do prefer fresh product, is my understanding.
Okay, so, and I guess my follow-up would be, this bill would take care of this, not just for this particular 1 cent increase, but also increases into the future. It would change process on an ongoing basis.
Mr. Chair, Senator Edwards, it would only change it for the 2 1-cent increases that are on the books today. If you enact a different cigarette tax increase, the legislature would consider a floor tax, depending on the value of the tax increase, like they did with the 13-cent increase. It was sufficient enough that it warranted the administrative cost from us, and it also warranted the cost of the retailers and the distributors to sit there and count all their inventory on the floor and then file a return and pay the tax on that difference.
Okay.
Senator Boquist?
Just because there's other bills quasi-related to this and deals. One of the things, remember, colleagues, in the past is back in 2005, era 2007, we were still at the hand tax stamping on some of these things, in which we literally pulled it off a sheet and put it on a cigarette. We would unpack it, pack it back up. And so we kind of went to the automated system, which is why these big rolls cost so much money now in order to implement it. And it is intriguing because, you know, the biggest section of smuggled cigarettes come out of Indonesia, Malaysia, you know, not beating it up, but countries like that. And then it comes through Canada and comes down here. And so, well, I'm sure there's a freshness issue. A lot of the black market stuff coming down, you know, just with port traffic causes, you know, get to be pretty old.
At some point, price matters.
Yeah, at some point, price matters. And I do recall from even 2005, 2007, exactly like Ms. Mack pointed out, is you know, there were tax stamps where occasionally we'd find tax stamps on the shelf, right, with the cigarettes that had been dusted off, and the tax stamps were quite old because those were up there on display and were never sold. And, of course, once they got to the freshness point, they didn't want to sell them. And so it was just up there in the display case, kind of like your fine china. But the tax stamps were wrong.
But so those would become contraband now?
Yes. You don't have a correct tax stamp, it is contraband.
But they won't be sold.
Right. It's the stamp.
Legally.
Legally.
Yeah, there's a little tricky word there.
Mr. Chair, Senator Edwards, and that's exactly why we're bringing this, because of the equity issue involved here.
Yeah, no, just because we're ruminating on quasi-other bills, what... Would you have to go through this same procedure, the department, if there was the preemption bill and, say, one of the counties raised their tax? How would that be administered?
Mr. Chair, if the one of the counties decided to do a cigarette tax, and there's a local preemption than that now, I think that probably under 305.620, which is a statute that allows us to enter into agreements with other entities, municipalities, like we do currently with the transit districts in Lane County and the tri-counties in Portland area, we would probably be able to enter into some sort of an agreement with them or consider some sort of cost-sharing agreement. I don't know for sure what those bills look like.
All right.
Okay.
Is that all the questions? I didn't mean to go so fast. I instructed Senator Boquist to move with military dispatch, and I know he's going to take me up on that. So, okay, this time I think
just trying to figure out who it's helping. And
well, we have a motion on the table now after all of that.
If anyone.
And, we have a do-pass recommendation moved by Senator Boquist to the floor of the Oregon State Senate. Is there any further discussion on House Bill 2489? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, House Bill 2489 moves to the floor of the Oregon State Senate. I think Senator Boquist should indeed carry this bill.
So you want me to slow down dispatch?
Okay. We have a couple of senators coming in on the sand bill. Until they get here, let's open up a public hearing and a work session on House Bill 2334. That's Christine.
fiduciary bill.
Mm-hmm. That's where it came from. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2334A would allow a payment of taxes, penalties, and interest found to be deficient within 30 days after an order to specially designate the complaint to the regular division of the tax court from the magistrate. It allows the taxpayer to file an affidavit alleging undue hardship within 30 days after receiving a notice of a lack of this affidavit from the court. And it has no fiscal impact, or it has a minimal fiscal impact and a minimal revenue impact.
Okay, Eric Kodesh and your team.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, my name is Eric Kodesh, and I'm a partner at Stoll Reeves, specializing in tax. I am here, however, as a representative of the taxation section of the Oregon State Bar in support of House Bill 2334. Now, as background for this bill, when a dispute involves a net income tax, the taxpayer does not have to pay the tax, penalty, and interest assessed by the Oregon Department of Revenue to contest the matter in the magistrate division. However, payment generally is required if the taxpayer wants to appeal to the regular division or skip the magistrate division and go straight to the regular division. There is an exception, however, to this payment obligation if payment would be an undue hardship to the taxpayer. Now, there was a 2013 decision by the regular division, which was in Scott v. Department of Revenue, that highlighted an unintended timing problem with how a taxpayer asserts that payment would be an undue hardship. House Bill 2334, which modifies ORS 305.419, fixes this problem, allowing litigants to lower the procedural bar and get to the meat of their claim. So what the bill does is that currently, under ORS 305.419, a taxpayer filing a complaint in the regular division for whom payment of the assessed tax and penalty and interest would be an undue hardship must file an affidavit of undue hardship along with the complaint. Failure to do so, even if by accident, results in the case being dismissed. House Bill 2334 expands this deadline requirement to give the taxpayer 30 days from being notified of a failure to file the affidavit to correct the matter. If the taxpayer does not meet that 30-day deadline, the judge will dismiss the case. So the modification to ORS 305.419 will provide modest mean litigants with some procedural flexibility while still ensuring that the Department of Revenue maintains its ability to collect the appropriate tax, penalty, and interest. And in developing this bill, we worked, the taxation section worked with the tax court, with Judge Breithaupt, and also with the Department of Revenue. Judge Breithaupt has approved of the language, and the department has confirmed that they can administer the law as amended.
Eric, can you kind of give me a hypothetical or the court case that this prompted?
Sure. The case, Scott, as I believe what happened was the taxpayer appealed a decision in the – appealed an audit to the magistrate division and lost. Taxpayer then filed an appeal of that to the regular division, and the taxpayer's attorney thought that he or she had mailed in the affidavit of undue hardship with the complaint. Unfortunately, it was not included with the filing, and so because of the current language, which says that the affidavit of undue hardship shall be filed with the complaint, since it wasn't filed with the complaint, the judge found that the tax court did not have subject matter, didn't have jurisdiction over the proceeding, and thus had to dismiss the complaint in its entirety.
The taxpayer was an individual?
Yes, taxpayer was an individual, and again, an individual for whom payment of the assessed tax, penalty, and interest would be an undue hardship. And there was no dispute, there was no dispute in the record about that. I mean, there may have been if things had happened timely, but presumably this was a person that it would have been difficult to be able to pay this tax and then contest the matter.
So we're just talking about making the rules a little more flexible.
Correct. So if this passed, when the issue arose, the court would have notified the taxpayer, and the taxpayer then would have had 30 days to correct the missed mail.
Okay. I think that's pretty straightforward. Any questions, Senator Boklas?
No, Mr. Chair, I don't have a question. I'm ready to make the motion if there's no one else signed up.
Okay. We have nobody else signed up. Senator Boklas.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2334A to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Boklas moves House Bill 2334A to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Objections? Seeing none. House Bill 2334A goes to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Senator Edwards, would you be so kind to carry this legislation?
Sure.
Thank you, Director. Thank you. Okay, we are awaiting Senators Roblin.
You know how many bills he has this session?
He's
in my committee all the time. I count him as the sixth committee member.
That's right.
There he is.
So you're telling me we should, there's a good reason to vote no here?
I asked him that.
I'm going to open up a public hearing and work session on House Bill 3030. Senator Roblin is here to join us. In the meantime, Kyle, can you give us a briefing, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3030, what it does, it authorizes the formation of sand control districts not within the corporate boundaries of a city for the purpose of controlling, moving, or removing drifting sand within a district. It details authority of the sand control districts and of district boards, authorizes districts to levy taxes and raise revenue, and it limits the amount of sand control districts to no more than blank of the real market value of all taxable property within the district, authorizes district to issue general obligation bonds within specified limits, and it adds the sand control district definition to the local service district and special district election statutes, and it declares an emergency effective on passage. So the two important things there. Can notice there is a blank right now in the limit of the amount of the sand control district to levy, so we would need an amendment language to either insert a limit in there or change the language in some way. I did include in OLIS, there's a document, it's a listing of all the different taxing districts, including special districts, which the sand control district would be, and the limits that are in statute right now related to those different districts. That information came from Department of Revenue's local budget manual, but that is an OLIS to give some frame of reference for the type of limits that are already out there existing right now. And just another reminder is the bill, what it does, it allows for the creation of sand control districts. It doesn't in and of itself create sand control districts. That would be done locally and through an election.
The counties would do the creation, or we would just...
There's a few different ways. It can be the county governing board can do it. It can also be through an election, or depending upon the number of citizens within an area, can also. There's three different ways that a district can be created. But if they're going to be levying, if the district will be levying a permanent taxing rate, it does have to go to the vote in either the May election or the fall election, more likely.
Okay, this went through what committee in the House?
Land use, rural communities and land use.
It went through the... Land Use Committee, and then passed the House. What was the vote?
I believe there might have been two excused, but other than that, I believe it's...
No, there was opposition to it last week because we heard about that. And it was because there was a blank.
Yeah, and it passed the House with a blank the total amount of dollars. The House passed a bill with a blank check, essentially.
Yeah, exactly.
Good job.
We do have the paperwork, Mr. Chair, but obviously with the... we were.
I think we need an amendment.
I'm going to be a no on that blank.
Yeah. Well, like sands through the hourglass. Senator Roblin.
Tell us about your sandbox.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. For the record, Arnie Roblin, Senate District 5. We sent some pictures up for people to share to show you what the problem is on the coast. And the interesting thing is that's a problem for a few years in that place, and then it may shift to another place, and then it goes back and forth depending on the currents and other kinds of things. So we have opportunities because one is getting too much sand and it's taking it away from another district that's trying to put sand back so we can move it around. It gets expensive, and it is a difficult thing. We used to have a lot more down on the dunes, and it was a very expensive thing for the state. So they hired some people to come in and put in beach grass, European beach grass, to stabilize the dunes because Highway 101 had to be shoveled off every couple of years because the dunes kept growing inland. And so different people have tried to handle that in different ways. This is really that beach sand that comes and goes because of the changes in the environment. And what they're asking for is simply the ability to set up their own districts and figure out how they're going to do it. I have no problem with figuring out. I was just talking to a couple of the other people from the counties about what that number should be. And as the LRO staff explained, it is true that there are three or four different ways. Every one of the ones that we've talked to involved would like to have a public vote, define their boundaries. There are some issues with respect if you don't have 100 members or more. So they're looking at how do we define the size of the particular group or the sand district. And then there's a whole list in this bill about how the formation of the district happens and then how the board of directors is picked and so on and so forth. The issue is if it's a very small district, then the tax rate is going to be adjusted, but those people who are going to be affected by it are going to affect the tax rate. And I think what we couldn't figure out is what's that number going to be that'll be able to help them do the things they need to do. And as a group, as opposed to individually, right now, what people have to do is individually try to figure out how to solve the problem for their house as it gets overflowed by the sand dunes, and that gets extremely expensive for them. And what they're trying to do is figure out, does the community want to save the first wave of the sand, or do they want to wait till it goes over those houses and comes to theirs next? And so it's trying to figure out who is the group that will be voting on this kind of issue for that particular area to take care of it. So again, a lot of different places on the coast get affected by the sand, and you really don't know. It's very difficult to predict what's the next beach that's going to happen. So this bill is designed to give the authority to the people who want to control themselves and to deal with this. And we know that the tax rate, because it'll have an effect on the overall tax rate, and there's only so much latitude in there, we don't know from district to district how much you could levy to not cause compression or other kinds of things. So that I think that's part of the reason that they couldn't come up with a number. We will work on that and try to get that to you, what makes the most sense. But that's kind of the problem that's happened. This group that really brought this bill to us in our district could easily come up with a number for them, but they were concerned that that would limit the group that comes next, and they wanted to make sure that a group of people who decide to tax themselves as a small group could determine what they needed to be able to do the work that they had to do in their particular area. So that's part of the problem with regard to that as well. Oh, and there's my other co-sponsor that got it through, and he might have a better answer of why they left it zero before they sent it over here. And with that, I would encourage you to let citizens have the ability to do their own things as a group to solve their own kinds of problems by being able to set up their own special district, which we do in a lot of other ways. So my Coos Bay North Bend Water Board, a whole bunch of others to meet the needs of a particular community have the ability to set up. We do it in our Eastern Oregon in the mountains with snow districts so that they can manage that and take it and move it and do the things that they need to do. This is just asking for the same possibility to deal with Mother Nature as they present problems and give local communities the option of taking care of their problem themselves.
Thank you. It is an interesting conundrum when you move and you're not in one place. Representative Gomberg,
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. And no, I did not have the pleasure of hearing the good senator. So if I repeat any of his well-chosen remarks, please forgive me for that. But as the committee knows well, the current statutes provide for about 30 different kinds of special districts, everything from mosquito control to cemetery districts to weather control districts. but they do not presently contain an option for sand control districts. And the issue here is not that we're imposing this level of government on people, but rather providing them with the opportunity, if they so choose and vote affirmatively, to create an opportunity to address problems. The good senator and I are from the beach, and we have sand at the beach. And in, most of the time, that sand is good news, but in some cases, it creates some challenges. As you can see, if you're looking at these sideways.
There's a setup there for them to look at. Too.
The north spit of Alsea Bay in Walport has got blowing sand, which drifts into the neighborhoods and actually clogs the roads, clogs the driveways, limits emergency vehicle access, in some cases blows as deep as the eaves of the houses so that people can't get in or out. And so what they're looking for is the opportunity collectively to join together to approve a sand control district and take the sand out of it, take the sand out of there. That's simply what we're talking about here, is providing one more opportunity for people to address their own problems. And I'm sure you already said that, Senator.
Pretty close to exact, yeah. You said it more eloquently.
Well, thank you.
Questions over to legislators. Senator Boquist.
Just for the record, I mean, to make sure, I mean, I think it was turn of the century, it was Bay Ocean that disappeared up in my county, just vaporized and the sand took it away. So this can go both directions.
Yes, it can.
It can giveth and it can taketh away. And I think it's the Alsea spit in the 70s or early 80s in which we had to do an emergency thing for the same.
Keeping it there. Yeah.
For keeping it there. Yep. So Representative, Senator, I mean, just for the technical aspects, page 2, I heard two things. One, we need to figure out what the percentage is in amendment, whether it's 2 to 10%, which seems to be the average between the 42 districts that are there, including some really weird ones I didn't know exist. And then the second thing, Senator Roblin, did I miss this or get this correct? You also wanted to have public vote language put into this?
I think it's there. There's three different ways to set up the
deal.
And in order to be able to levy the tax, it has to be a vote. So that's already taken care of.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Senator Edwards, did you have a question?
What has happened to date? I mean, how are folks dealing with this now? Who's paying for it?
Individual homeowners
have to deal
with their own particular problem. The county probably has to figure out how to deal with the road, as I understand it. But, so that's what's happening. And it's kind of overwhelming when you go out there and start shoveling. Sometimes it just takes over the house. I mean, in really bad times, and some of these are vacation homes, so by the time they get back, the problem is already there, and it's kind of like overwhelming.
Senator Boquist.
I mean, and Senator Roblin, you might remember, follow-up question to on Senator Edwards. I think it was, I mean, the federal government back in the 70s, I think, came in with some grant money to the Corps, or somebody came in, remember, and riff-raffed part of your district along the coast there. And, of course, that was exactly by the time the federal government actually acted, if I remember, a bunch of the houses had already fallen into the ocean.
Yeah, that's true. And what's our little community just into Lincoln County, into Tillamook County?
You're talking about Nestwin?
Nestwin and some of those other places. They're having the opposite problem in some of these. That their beach is going away, and so they're getting together to try to figure out how do we, and they're going after grants to do exactly the same thing, riprap and other kinds of stuff, which the reality slows it down but doesn't work over time. And I've had a couple of places where the cliffs are falling away right now. Down by Florence, when a little creek or river chooses to meander a different way and undercamps the bank, and all of a sudden you start losing, you know, a couple feet a year from the bank, and your house is on the edge, is kind of scary. So, but I believe people make choices, and then we're trying to give them an opportunity to fix the choices they've made.
And Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm not going to speak to the merits of a particular district. What we're trying to do here is create the opportunity for people to address these problems. But it seems to me that should our constituents decide to create a district like this, what it allows them to do is to provide ongoing maintenance, ongoing addressment of small problems, rather than waiting till there's a really big problem, which is a lot more expensive to solve.
Senator Butcher.
Having a little experience in special taxing districts.
Yeah, no kidding.
But I assume the process is like all special. You have to create a boundary. Everybody in the boundary gets to vote on it. Create a board. The board comes up with the assessments. You have a board of equalization, so if somebody feels that they're being assessed wrong. So it would follow that same template.
Yep.
So it's quite a process.
There are actually three in the statute to allow them, but it's very much that way. And so each one has a separate deal. But if you want to levy taxes, you've got to have votes, and you've got to elect people. You've got to
Exactly. The
point being, Senator, this is not being imposed on anybody.
It's providing them the opportunity to
approve it.
You're just doing a statute that allows us a taxing district for...
Yeah. We're actually using an existing statute and sticking this one in as one of the 30 now plus one different districts.
Okay. Senator Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you say you're not imposing it on anybody, but of course you may be imposing it on 49% of the people in the taxing district.
No, we wouldn't be. It would be the district.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Someone would.
Yes.
And so looking at that particular photo, the people out on the edge there are going to be voting yes, and the people sort of in the middle are going to be not so sure, and the people on the inside are going to be voting no. And so how you form that district is really important. So that gets to the heart, I think, of the problem is how you form the district, and that's what I have a problem with.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator, in the interest of full disclosure, let me say that the problem is actually a little bit worse than that, because in communities like this, as many as half the homes may be second homes and owned by people who pay taxes in this district but don't vote in this district. And that's a concern, obviously. But you're right. Drawing the boundaries is always very critical to make sure you're including the people that benefit but not burdening the people who are not affected.
Senator Edwards.
Has this been done elsewhere? And if so, has it affected insurance rates, improved them?
Yeah.
Does the insurance industry have an opinion about?
I did not study other states. It's not available in this state, so okay. I don't know the answer to that question.
Right.
Are there erosion control districts?
That's a good question. My belief is that there is, but I...
Well, Mr. Chair, the closest
there's a,
one...
There's a long list in the statute.
Weather modification
soil and
district.
Water.
Soil and water. Yeah.
Drainage district.
Conservation districts.
This is going to be...
So I guess soil and water would be the one
that would
do
that.
District.
Wow. They have one tool already. They could just modify the weather.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right. It's number 39, Weather Modification District. Boy, that legislature that did this one must have been interesting.
Yep.
All right, further questions?
More work to be done.
I think there's a biblical reference about building on the sand, but we won't go there.
But please don't go to rules.
We need an amendment here, so we'll revisit this.
And we'll have our good thinkers from the county and others come up with some numbers that put the variation there and also the other amendment that was back there. So,
okay.
So, do you want to work with LRO to help come up with some numbers? Okay.
All right.
So, Mr. Bobet will work with LRO to come up with some stuff to make that happen.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. I apologize for being tardy. You understand the nature of conflicts in this building.
That's right.
Boy, do I.
No shortage.
Okay, that clears our decks for today. We'll revisit 3030 down the road and take it up again. Remember, we're going to go to the tax credit committee on Thursday, Paul. So at the same time, same place, but it will be a different committee, including all of you. So
I call that many ways and means.
Many ways and means backwards, in reverse. So with no further business before us, we will adjourn.
Yeah.